Are you ready to be in the spotlight? Are you ready to share your story with the world? Well, Snails with No Shells is where you need to be. Available on all digital platforms, Facebook and YouTube. Snails with No Shells. Leave that shell at the door. Greetings, greetings, beautiful ones. I am Ms. BJ Martin, and this is Snails with No Shells. Leave that shell at the door. That's my only rule. All right, let's get into it. I would like to bring my next amazing guest. I'm so thrilled to have him on here because you'll see when I bring him out. Let's bring him on out, the amazing Andre T. Johnson.
Dr. Martin, how are you doing?
Oh, I am amazing. Thank you. How are you?
Doing well. Glad for the opportunity. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time because you are here. Ladies and gentlemen, this man is busy. You're going to find out he is super busy and I love it. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's get into it. I'm going to read just a little bit of his bio. He has an amazing bio, but I want you guys to do some research. This is Andre T. Johnson. He's a longtime sports journalist, and a spring 2000 graduate of the University of the Memphis with bachelor arts degree in journalism. I love it. Skip down a little bit. He worked as a full-time staffer for the Commercial Appeal from 2000 to 2002, during which he was the beat reporter for the Memphis, Hound Dogs. Of now defunct American Basketball Association and the Memphis Explorers of the Arena Football to League.
That was pretty fun.
That was fun. Oh my gosh. And he was senior writer for the newspaper, the Memphis Sport Magazine. He has interviewed numerous sports personalities, most notably, oh my God, this list goes on and on. I'm going to read a few. Archie Manning, LeBron James, George Iceman Gervin, Isaac Bruce, Layla Ali. Love Layla Ali. Oh my gosh, she's beautiful. Colin Kaepernick, Vince Carter. What's up, Vince? I like this. We got Phil Jackson, Coach Phil. Oh, the list goes on and on. Lamar Odom, Derek Fisher. Oh my gosh. Colin Kaepernick and just many others. He's interviewed everybody. A well-respected journalist. We're going to talk about that in his own right. A media savvy business venture. Okay. A uniquely designed media. Okay. No, we're going to talk about that. I don't want to get into that just yet. That's like the meat of it all. But Mr. Johnson is married to Latambria Johnson. Okay. The couple have been married since September 14th, 2019. They share a blended family of four. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we're going to get into it. Okay, Andre, because I skipped some of this because some of these are my questions. Where were you born and raised?
Born in the historic city of Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's where I got my start in media. And this is a story I always share. Growing up, I've always been connected to sports. Sports, you know, essentially became my life. I think one of the biggest adventures is someone who was pretty much a loner growing up. Mm-hmm. I had friends, but of course, with me, I would break away and go watch sports, watch ESPN. Of course, back during that time, ESPN would run a lot of tape delayed sporting events, and I would sit there and I would, you know, watch those games over and over and over. The NCAA tournament, most of those games were being tape delayed, you know, on ESPN. ESPN, of course, wasn't the global movement that it is now, the worldwide leader in sports. But one of the biggest adventures that happened in my household as a child, my mom getting cable, because, you know, even when I was on punishment, I would sneak and watch sports on TV. I would sneak and watch, you know, ESPN. And then, of course, you know, aside from March Madness, you know, around 84, 85, I got into, you know, falling in love with the NFL. I remember my mom when I was 15 years old, buying my first football. And on the box of the football was a picture of Joe Montana. And then from that point, I just fell in love with the 49ers. Mm-hmm. Been a fan ever since. And my passion for college basketball, NBA, the NFL just really heightened, you know, from that point. I remember when I got into journalism school, well, not journalism, way before I got into journalism school, but I remember when I was in middle school, I would pretty much, my mother allowed me to decorate my entire room with players, NBA players. Mm-hmm. All the NBA players of that generation, you know, in the early to mid to late 80s. You know, those players were a part of my life at that time because I had those pictures all over my wall. Mm-hmm. I made a personal pledge to myself that one day I will interview, you know, NBA players. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's where that passion for journalism began to emerge. Then, of course, once I got to high school, I began to prepare for the world of journalism. Not necessarily from an academic standpoint. I had some obstacles there, but of course, you know, I knew that in order for me to, you know, even arrive at this point, this stage in my life, that I had to devote my attention to academics, mm-hmm. Go to a 4-year college. And even as an African American college journalist at a predominantly, you know, at a white university, you know, I began to understand how I had to work just as hard as my Caucasian counterparts.
Right.
I didn't get some of those opportunities to really expand on my mechanics as they did. And I saw this. I saw this in the college newsroom. But I was determined to work hard and kind of create my own voice as a journalist. As I tell aspiring journalists now, create your own voice. Create your own writing style. And once I did that, you know, people began to take what I wanted to do more seriously. Mm-hmm. And that led to internships. And then it ultimately led to me landing a job 3 days after I graduated from college.
Mm. Wow. Wow. And that's amazing because most of the time, you know, you hear young, especially young Black men, young melanated men, it's usually about them actually wanting to play the sport. You know, you see that so much. So this is my first time, you know, really seeing someone, a melanated journalist from this aspect. I love that. And so for some of our viewers, especially our younger viewers, name some of these 80s players, because they might not know, you know.
Well, yeah, I always thought that, you know, honestly, I really appreciate how Larry Bird and Magic Johnson changed the game as we know it, because the NBA is so watered down now. And, you know, during the time that I really fell in love with the NBA, you know, in the mid to late 80s, we had Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, obviously Michael Jordan was coming on in the league, mm-hmm. you know, as a rookie. For someone who people didn't know this. They wear his shoes all the time. But Michael Jordan, I believe in his first or second year, actually suffered a broken leg. He's out for the season. But he rebounded from that. And, you know, he came out the next year, scored 63 points in a playoff game against Boston. And the rest, as they say, was history. You know, I remember Sports Illustrated having him on the cover the next week saying, "A star is born." And look at what he's doing now. He's still having a major impact, not just on the NBA, but the world of sports in general. But back in the 80s, you had these guys, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, mm-hmm. Moses Malone, Charles Barkley, Michael Thompson, Michael Cooper. That 80s Lakers team, that 80s Boston team was amazing. It was pretty much equivalent to the rivalry between the Niners and the Cowboys in the early 90s. They pretty much played every year mm-hmm. in the playoffs. I think it was like a 3 or 4 year stretch that those teams played. But the way these guys transcended the game and just really took the game to another level, you don't see a lot of that today. You know, the game is so watered down that you have a lot of selfish players. Mm-hmm. They're more you know, they're more concerned about getting a big payday. And there's nothing wrong with getting a big payday. You know, if I'm with a major network, you know, and even my colleague Stephen A. Smith has negotiated bigger contracts with mm-hmm. ESPN. So I have nothing against an athlete or even a professional journalist negotiating contracts to get the big payday. But, you know, again, the 80s, the game as I knew it back then is today's game is nothing like it was back then.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed it's like it used to be kind of a little more physical. It's like all the sports are kind of like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that.
Exactly, no, especially in the NFL now. You know, some of the hits that these quarterbacks and running backs, you know, had taken back in the day, you can't do that now because they throw a flag. Now, on the flip side of that, there are long-term effects from some of these athletes who, you know, suffer with concussions, mm-hmm. Even years after retirement. You know, you have players who even suffer with mental issues.
Those mental health. Mm-hmm.
Now I'm sure a lot of these millennials don't know this, but Junior Seau, who's one of the best defensive linemen in NFL history, you know, back in the late 80s, most of the 90s, he retired and then, of course, ended up, unfortunately, committing suicide because of long-term, you know, concussions that he suffered. Mm-hmm. So I can kind of see why things mm-hmm. have changed. But again, you know, I appreciate, you know, the game of the mid to late 80s and all throughout the 90s, because mm-hmm. that is what really brought me close to sports as a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were really into sports. What was it like growing up, though, outside of the sports? We're going to get back into that. Outside mm-hmm. of sports, what was it like growing up in Memphis? Oh, I've heard so much about it.
Heard so much about Memphis.
Yes.
Memphis is, I've been in Dallas going on 9 years, but Memphis is, again, is I can liken it to sports. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up, obviously, you know, this generation is more IT, electronic device savvy. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that. And I was just a normal snot-nosed kid growing up in North Memphis, running up and down the street, playing tag football, riding Tonka trucks, going to summer camps. Mm-hmm. I remember those days, and it was always something linked to sports. You know, growing up from of my mother's children is just my sister and me. But of course, my grandmother had 15 children. We lived we had a big family. I'm from a big extended family. Mm-hmm. You know, we always was a close-knit family, Christian-oriented environment. Mm-hmm. Church wasn't an option. It was a requirement. Right. You know, on Sundays.
Right.
And I remember, you know, going to church on every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bus would pick us up and take us to church every Sunday. But then, of course, we would come home when my grandmother cooked these massive soul food dinners every weekend.
Right, like the movie. Like
right,
the
exactly.
Movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's real.
Exactly how it was. And mm-hmm. you know, I remember, you know, those meals and how families put a lot of emphasis on the sanctity of family. Mm-hmm. And so those are the days that I miss, because you don't see a lot of that now. That's one of the reasons, you know, even as someone who's essentially a newlywed, I put a lot of emphasis on family. You know, we have here, even in my household here in Dallas, we have, you know, our family time on yes. Sunday, where we're, you know, we're sitting here in the front room. And, you know, a credit to my daughters and my wife. And of course, I would kind of drift off and go take what they call an old man nap, and I'd come back to the living room. But, you know, for the most part, we try to still remain connected as a family, because again, family values have pretty much dwindled throughout the last, you know, decade and a half. And it's nothing like what it was when I was growing up in Memphis. So, you know, for that reason, I'm forever grateful to my extended family for all those moments, because it's really instilled in me the qualities of, you know, being a leader in a family. And it has really instilled in me the importance of having that family time outside of everything else I do.
Yes. And that is true. That family time is very important. And like, you know, I grew up every Sunday and going to church every Sunday, Sunday school. So like we stayed in church Sunday dinners for sure. And even I'm thinking about, you know, even the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, I had uncle playing backgammon, you know, they was playing chess, you know, but then we were watching sports. We always had sports on television. Right.
Right. Exactly. You know, back then, you know, Memphis finally got a professional sports franchise back in 1999. Mm-hmm. There were talks of bringing the NFL team there that never materialized. The NFL team ended up going up to Nashville, which is about 3.5-4 hours away from Memphis, Tennessee Titans, which used to be the Houston Oilers, the only one there. But, you know, growing up in Memphis, Memphis is, even to this day, Memphis is primarily a basketball town, basketball craze town, where the University of Memphis basketball is still the biggest sports team in that town. Mm-hmm. When that team is relevant, when that team is a national standout, it brings the city together. Everybody is talking about the Memphis Tigers, regardless of the segregation that takes place in that city. I still think that city is still segregated. Obviously, that was the place where Martin Luther King was assassinated in 1968. And now there's, you know, the Lorraine Motel is a museum now, where people from all over the world come and visit that museum. But it's something about sports, and particularly basketball, in that town, where Tiger basketball brought that team together. I remember when I was going to camp in the mid-80s, it was at then Memphis State University. Of course, the university became the University of Memphis in 1994, but I remember going to camp and, you know, meeting some of the players, you know, you're running to them, because you're at camp on their campus. So, you know, there's always that possibility that you're going to run into players. And we look at those players like superstars. And so that was the biggest sport in Memphis, even in the 1970s. Especially in the 1980s, that 94, 95 team that went to the Final Four. You know what? I was just thinking about that particular team the other day. You know, and that's the mind of a sports writer. Sometimes we think about sports. We don't even tell people. But I remember I was in the car with my wife, and I was thinking about that 84, 85 Memphis State basketball team, and how they went to the Final Four that year. At that time, you know, nowadays the Final Four played in football stadiums. Mm-hmm. Back then, 60s, 70s, 80s, the Final Four are played in regular NBA rings.
Right.
That's where they were being played. And of course, it wasn't as commercialized as it is now. And I remember, I was just thinking about that 84, 85 team the other day, and how, you know, some of those players unfortunately died premature deaths. Mm-hmm. Three of those the four teams that went to the Final Four that year. Three of those coaches are already passed away. One of them passed away last year, which is John Thompson, black coach at Georgetown. And so, who's coached at Georgetown. So I thought about that the other day and just thought about how that team brought my city together. And so, you know, again, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, Memphis is pretty much not the Memphis that I knew when I was growing up. And that's not an indictment on the city. Mm-hmm. It's just that I would like to see my city, the town that in which I grew up, the town where I had my first break. I would love to see my city, you know, make emerging changes like the city I'm in now, which is Dallas, Texas. My 11th grade English teacher, you know, anytime I'm reading things on the internet, and I hear about crime, I hear about senseless deaths, senseless crimes that are coming out of my city, and I still follow all the media outlets on social media, so I would see all of these different various senseless crimes that are taking place, you know, in my city, and it would irk me. And I always comment under these posts, Memphis, national embarrassment. This is a national embarrassment, because it was safe to go outside when I was a child. It was safe to go to certain places when I was a child. And now when I go home, it's always this question, is it safe to go here? Is it safe to go there?
Right.
And I remember my 11th grade English teacher, she sent me a direct message via Facebook. She said, you know, it saddens me that you always have something negative to say about Memphis. And I began to explain to her some of the factors that supported my stance on how I feel about Memphis. And so she visited Dallas about a month ago. And she saw some of those same changes that I mentioned, the same comparison and contrast that I saw. And she ended up messaging me back and she said, you know what? You were right.
You're right.
Exactly what you're talking about. So, you know, again, it's not an indictment on my city. I'm not knocking my city. I'm not down in my city, because I still have loved ones there. That's where I got my start in journalism. That's something that can never be taken away from me. Right. That's where I finished college there. I didn't start college in Memphis, but I finished college in Memphis. I was blessed to have gotten a four-year degree from, you know, one of the biggest universities in, you know, in the state. And even as a first generation college graduate coming from a big family. So, you know, again, I would like to see a lot of changes in my city. And that starts with city officials, that starts with, you know, even the school board is taking a black eye now, making national headlines for some things that are going on surrounding the superintendent. So, you know, again, if anybody out there listening, from Memphis, don't think that I despise the city. It's just that I want to see some positive changes, and I want to see us making more national headlines for all the right reasons.
Yes, I love that. You love your city, you know? And sometimes the truth is not pretty. Mm-hmm. Truth is not pretty. The truth can be very ugly, and the reality can be very ugly, you know? And so someone needs to voice that truth.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just a big lie, right?
So it's all about being, you know, that's one of the things I learned as a journalist in college, particularly in journalism school. It's about, you know, journalism is not all about writing to make people happy. It's not about reporting, should I say, to make people happy. It's not about reporting to make people sad. We report to inform, to be objective, to state the facts.
Right.
You know, if there's a sex offender going on in your neighborhood and we don't report it, and your daughter, your son become victimized by the sex offender, then the media will get slammed for that. Why wasn't it reported? On the flip side, when we report it and this sex offender is caught by authorities and is taken in and sentenced to 30, 40 years in prison, then we done our job because we reported that. So, you know, I think that's one of the biggest misperceptions that people have about journalists. We have to state and report the facts. And I remember one of my editor at the Memphis Commercial Appeal newspaper where I was hired, and I'm so forever grateful to that newspaper. And God rest his soul, because he passed away mm-hmm. years ago. He was the editor and publisher. One of his comments was, and at times I tend to quote it for people who want to knock journalists, because people hate people in the media. They do, just like they hate attorneys, just like they hate mm-hmm. pastors and ministers. Mm-hmm. But one of the quotes is, if you don't want it printed, don't let it happen. He would always say that. And certain things, if you don't want in the newspaper, if you don't want the press to report it, then don't let it happen. So if you decide to go and rob a bank and you don't get away with it, and we write about you and we report it, well, you caused it. We're just reporting it to the masses so that it doesn't happen again.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of times we get people tend to slam us a lot. I remember when I first, especially my rookie year as a reporter, I remember going to the barbershop, and I would hear from people in the barbershop every week, because I was, you know, rookie sports reporter. Mm-hmm. A lot of times my assignment editor would not send me, even though I grew up in inner city Memphis, my assignment editor would send me to cover football games in the upscale parts of town, in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. They would send me to cover those games on Friday nights.
Mm.
And so I always got these questions every single week. I walk into the barbershop, why do you cover this game? Why y'all cover this? Y'all put this little paragraph in the paper? And I would explain to them. This is something I learned in journalism school, because I was curious about it too. Why does the U.S. News and World Reports always ranking these colleges? They always got to put all these Princetons and Harvards and Yales and mm-hmm. Stanfords and Cal Berkeley and Michigan and all these high profile colleges. Why you always rank them in the top 20, top 30 in the country? Mm-hmm. One reason I found out, the same rings true for newspapers. Most of those editors, those top executive editors at those newspapers, mm-hmm. children go to those schools.
Oh.
That's who buy the paper mostly. That's who put big money into these papers, into these publications. Now, this happened before newspapers began to go on life support, because most newspapers are digital now.
Right.
And of course, that's something that I don't like, because I am a newspaper guy.
Right.
But that is the reason why. And I've always found myself explaining that to people, and, you know, people begin to, some went as far as to label me an Uncle Tom, but I told them I had no control over what my assignment editor sent me to report.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of times people will, you know, speak out of ignorance when mm-hmm. it comes to things like that. And so, you know, that never diminished my love and passion for journalism. And, you know, I matter of fact, even though newspapers have suffered tremendously within the past two decades, I never lost my passion and love for journalism. So here we are.
Dang, that's crazy. I did not know. I didn't know that the journalists went through all that. I had no idea. Wow. Oh, yeah. So now I love it. We're getting the backstory. Mm-hmm. We just see the perform, you know, we just see the what's printed out. We just see, you know, your story, but we don't know what it took to get the story and the backlash that you get after putting the story out. Wow, I had no idea.
Yes. Yes. And for years, you know, we're the only profession. If you really think about it, mm-hmm. we're the only profession. This is something I learned in journalism school as well. But we're the only profession that's protected by the U.S. Constitution. Freedom of the press.
Mm.
Doctor, a lawyer, mm-hmm. a teacher, a pastor, engineer, regardless of whatever profession you in. My wife is in dentistry. You all have to have a license to do what you have to do in those industries. In journalism, you don't. We're protected by the U.S. Constitution. And so that's why, you know, and there have been times where, you know, government have tried to make it where we have to be licensed to do our job, but you know, we're the only industry that's protected by the U.S. Constitution. So, and I found that fascinating as well. So, you know, and that's why we're able to go to these high profile events and don't have to pay to get in, because they give us media passes to come in and do what we do. So I'm grateful about that as well.
That's the perks. All right. The young people or anybody watching, you see, it's perks being, you know, perks of being a journalist. If you're thinking about getting into it, that's definitely one of them. I love that. So how long were you in journalism school? Did you have to go to a regular college first and then go to journalism school? Or how did that work?
Actually, journalism school is obviously at the university. I enrolled initially in fall of 1993. After I left Memphis Whitehaven High School, I immediately enrolled in the University of Tennessee School of Journalism. And of course, you know, it's getting back to what I was mentioning earlier. Mm-hmm. I was one of those types of students who, I didn't party a lot as a college student. I went to a lot of parties. I did. I started at 12 o'clock at night. And I had already done what I needed to do throughout the day. So there was nothing else to do. So I went to parties. But I partied quite a bit. But I always worked a lot too while I was in college. I was one of those type of persons that I didn't want to call home and ask for money. I wanted my own money. And I like to dress up too. Mm-hmm. So
he still be dressing now to the nines.
I would dress up a lot and I always just wanted, I was kind of like a little independent. Mm-hmm. College student, which led to my not performing so well in the classroom. Okay. I didn't apply myself as a college student. Mm-hmm. And so college for me lasted 7 years. And at some point I began to think that am I going to be a career student? In other words, I started off as a traditional student. Mm-hmm. Once you turn 25, you are considered a non-traditional student. Okay. If you enroll in college at 25 years of age or above, according to most colleges and universities, you are considered a non-traditional student. I graduated college as a non-traditional student at 25 years of age. Mm-hmm. But I had two internships. I spent so much time in the college newsroom working with a campus newspaper. I was the only Black college journalist on our campus newspaper. So a lot of people, particularly the Black student body, knew who I was. Mm-hmm. They would see my columns every week in the campus paper. And I would love to go into the University Center on Thursday afternoon, but that was the day the paper came out. I thought that was the day to showcase, because you see, I walk into the University Center, people are reading newspapers and reading my stories. They tell me about my story. They call me newspaper guy, the news dude, and you know, I had all these weird names, and but I wasn't really applying myself as a college student.
Okay.
I knew I could do the work, but I spent so much time doing other things, and so this is why I ran into issues such as academic probation, and then I end up leaving the University of Tennessee, going to a junior college in Mississippi, which is about 45 minutes from Memphis. Okay. And that for me was a defining moment, because again, when I got to that college, I had learned so much at the university, but it was just a matter of me pulling my grades up, getting back to a 4-year school, and finishing and sealing the deal.
Okay.
Because when I left the university to go to a junior college and pull my grades up, I was already a senior in college.
Mm.
I was a senior. So I spent a year and a half. Actually, 2 years, two academic years, four academic semesters, which is equivalent to 2 years, spent all that time pulling my grades up.
Mm.
Here's the silver lining in all of that. Had I graduated in 4 years, majoring in print journalism, I would not have gotten hired by a major daily newspaper in those 4 years. Because I recall the conversation. The editor who hired me out of college, I recall the conversation he and I had. And I asked him, when I think I was maybe a sophomore or junior, so what are my chances of getting hired at a big newspaper coming out of college? He said, you will have to go work at a small, relatively smaller paper about mm-hmm. 2-4 years before we even would consider hiring you.
Wow.
This is had I graduated in 1997, I went to college in 93. Mm-hmm. Had I graduated in 97, I would have been faced with going to a much smaller or even a weekly newspaper mm-hmm. for peanuts and Coke.
Wow.
But because my college graduation, should I say, was prolonged, mm-hmm. because I ended up spending 2-2.5 years just even pulling my grades up. By the time I graduated in 2000, some of those restrictions with major newspapers had been lifted. So when I graduated on May 5th, 2000, 3 days later, I walked into the newsroom of a major daily newspaper.
Wow.
Oh, that is the silver lining that I see in failure. What is my point? There's always a silver lining in moments of failure.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we should always look for, the silver lining in whatever obstacle you're faced with. And that is what I can take from having faced academic probation, going to a junior college,
mm-hmm.
leaving the university, the traditional college life, and having to get accepted back to university and spending another year and a half there just mm-hmm. to graduate.
Wow. You had to get it done by any means necessary.
I had to get it done because journalism was something I always knew. Because I spent so much time in the newsroom, I knew what to do mm-hmm. as a journalist. Mm-hmm. Going to journalism school, you're learning the whys. Why are you doing
it? Mm-hmm.
You know, taking journalism, communications, law classes. It was, had nothing to do with newspaper. But just like business, mm-hmm. whatever field you're in, education, you have to take a law class. And that was a law class that we had to take to learn how not to get sued. That was one of the hardest classes I had taken as an undergraduate. Matter of fact, I failed it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Before I even passed it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having spent all that time in school, I was relieved on May 5th, 2000 at 6:32 in the evening when I looked down at my watch and my name was called to get my degree.
Yes. Yes.
And I remember everything that happened that day. I didn't find out I was graduating until about 3 hours before I graduated.
Wow.
And I went to the graduation practice that morning. I had no idea that I would even be qualified to graduate.
Wow.
I got my last grade around noon, and I was officially cleared to graduate. Had my cap and gown and everything.
Wow.
And was officially cleared to graduate mm-hmm. around 1 o'clock, and the graduation was at 4.
Wow. That is wow.
One of the happiest moments of my life, because I remember my mom managed to get down there. I didn't tell her anything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell her. You know, when I found out about 1 o'clock that afternoon, that I was, hey, I'm finally, this 7-year stretch is finally about to end.
Mm-hmm.
Getting ready to go into the next phase of my life. That weekend alone was just mind-boggling for me. It was just so memorable, so emotional. I woke up Saturday morning and I cried, and I mm-hmm. ended up, because I had graduated finally, and then, mm-hmm. of course, 2 days later, I ended up walking and landing my dream job. So that whole week, I'm just so forever grateful to God for what happened, what transpired that weekend.
Yes.
Because it was well worth the wait. And 7 years, 7 from a biblical perspective is completion.
Yes. Yep. That's amazing. I love that. And thank you for, you know, being transparent and sharing that story. Some people don't want to tell, you know, their struggles, you know, what, and be honest about things that happen.
You have to be. In no way am I condoning that a student go to school and finish in 7 years. You know, everyone,
right.
Some students finish in 3 years.
Right.
Some don't finish.
Right.
Some are one semester wonders.
Right.
They go for a semester, they leave, and they don't go back because they find out that college isn't for them.
Right.
And I always knew that college was for me. you know, I had other things going on, such as working and, you know, trying to look nice for the girls. And
right.
So, you know, but I knew I could do the work, as evidenced by what happened on May 5th, 2000. But, you know, again, this is extremely imperative that I share this with the young people.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that whatever you go to, if you know that college is for you, you have to work hard. You have to apply yourself. There are activities that you're involved in. Yeah, get involved, because those things will go a long way for you for years to come. And it did for me, you know, working on the campus newspaper. Major newspapers saw that, you know, every week that my stories were published, I would send them back to Memphis to the Memphis newspaper. I did this. Mm-hmm. I would mail the newspapers to the Memphis paper. So by the time I applied for an internship, they already knew who I was.
Mm. All right, take notes.
Yes, no golden opportunity is wasted.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point. That's the point I want to make. No golden opportunity is wasted. You have to take advantage. And, you know, fortunately for me, it took 7 years to get out of school, but those 7 years were probably the most memorable. Was probably the most memorable season of my life. And if it weren't for those 7 years, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love you. Like, you didn't give up. And some people say sometimes our time is not God's time. Right. So, you know, you can have a plan. And I talk about that. You can have a plan and have your blueprint, but it doesn't always work the way you think it's going to work.
Right.
You know, sometimes God has something that that he needs to let you know.
I believe those additional 3 years mm-hmm. that I spent in college trying to pull my grades up and ultimately trying to graduate
mm-hmm.
was a setup for God to bless me with the dream job I got.
Mm-hmm.
I know it is, because that's what happened.
Exactly.
So, you know, mm-hmm. you know, I'm happy about that. I'm happy right. It took me 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe had I come out of college at just 22 years of age, I'm still young. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have got a job at a newspaper, even if it was a smaller one, and messed it up.
But right.
Because those 3 years,
mm-hmm.
those 3 years to prepare to and get more advanced experience.
Yes.
It really was a setup and a defining moment in my career.
And probably some, you know, we probably matured a little bit during that time too.
Oh, absolutely. I had no choice about it. You know, obviously, yeah, you definitely matured, because, you know, it was a humbling experience, because I was taken out of my comfort zone.
I'm
going to a university. When you at the university, mm-hmm. you got all the perks that come with going to school at a university, the college, the traditional college life. That was all snatched away from me, and I was sent to school as a commuter.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, that was definitely a wake-up call for me, because mm-hmm. I know that if I don't get it right at this school, at a junior college,
mm-hmm.
which is probably why I should have started off to begin with, but had I not gotten it right at a junior college, there's no way I would go back to university and be successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that's where it all takes place, when you get kicked out of that comfort zone.
Absolutely.
Well, and because the comfort zone could be your enemy,
mm-hmm.
you know? You think it's good, but it could cause you to be stagnant. It could be holding you back, potentially.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. So everything definitely happens outside of that comfort zone. I love this story. Thank you for sharing that. Now let's get into making headline news. What's up with that? Let's talk about that, Mr. Johnson.
Okay. We can stick with the comfort zone theme per se. Making headline news was started on Thursday, December the 8th, 2016. I was in my comfort zone working for another publication mm-hmm. that was based out of Memphis. Here I am in Dallas. I had been here for a little more than 2 years working for a publication out of Memphis. I was pretty much doing the same exposure type thing for business owners and athletes around the country, but it wasn't my publication. Mm-hmm. It was someone else's publication. I was just the senior writer, the lead editor for the publication.
Okay.
So I came here to Dallas, currently working under that publication for about two and a half years. And on the morning of December 8, 2016, the publisher of that publication ceased operations of that, of his publication. He didn't tell me.
So what does that mean, cease operations?
He shut it down.
Oh.
I had no access to it. Couldn't log in, couldn't create stories, couldn't post stories, had an NBA game that day, and just attended the morning practice of that NBA team. And when I was getting ready to put up my pregame report, I couldn't log in and cease operation. I called them, emailed them, texted them, never got a response to this day. You've been a part of my publication. I had book advertisers that day. Mm-hmm. So I was faced with two options. Either give my advertisers their money back or start my own publication. Comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had just left the arena. I was in my car, in my truck, on the parking lot with my laptop. And I said, I am not going to leave this arena until my own publication is up and running. This is about 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time that morning.
Mm-hmm.
By 2 o'clock that afternoon, Making Headline News was up and running. Making Headline News.
Wow.
Was not only founded in downtown Dallas, but it was founded on the parking lot of an NBA arena. And here we are.
Wow.
All those years I spent in journalism, all those years I spent writing for different newspapers around the country, people had already bought into my vision as a journalist,
mm-hmm.
but knew my reporting style, you know, things of that nature. And even to this day, as I mentioned, the editor who I work for, the publisher who I work for all those years, ceased operations. Haven't heard from him to this day. No, we're still Facebook friends too. We are. He never got back with me about what happened. But, you know, I don't take things like that personal because it was time to, because if I'm focusing on why that publication ceased operations, then it's taken away from what I should be doing. And I believe mm-hmm. God was stretching my faith that day.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't necessarily just testing. He was pushing me to stretch my faith.
Yes.
And once I book an advertiser, what I want to do is earn that advertiser's trust. Mm-hmm. And I call my advertisers back and say, hey, I'm going to have to refund you money because the publication ceased operations. I could have potentially lost my credibility that day.
Right.
So I had to make it happen. And not only was I blessed to make it happen, I came back bigger and better than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
So now I see the day-to-day operations of my own media outlet, which brought in, even during the pandemic, unprecedented economic revenue.
Mm.
Because there were businesses that was looking to still remain relevant during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So they reached out to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so Making Headline News, I believe, is my baby,
mm-hmm.
obviously, but it has been a game changer in my career
mm-hmm.
as a journalist. And so for that, I'm grateful about that. And I'm so grateful to you and all the advertisers around the country who have logged on, who have followed my work throughout these years. I'm so humbled by that because, you know, it's people like you who have made this publication to what it is. It's not so much all the years that I spent in journalism school. It's my advertisers around the country, people who I haven't even met in person.
Mm-hmm.
But they seen enough of my work to trust my work,
mm-hmm.
purchase advertising.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I'm really, really happy about. Yeah, I'm fulfilling my dream, you know, interviewing pro athletes. That's great. I love that, but it's my advertisers around the country who have really made this thing, have really brought this publication to what it is now. And so that's something that I don't take lightly. So, you know, again, I believe that this gentleman seeks in the operations of his publication. Mm-hmm. That was God's way of taking me out of my comfort zone, mm-hmm. to stretch my faith, to start my own publication. So here we are.
I love that. You had to go through the cocoon, And he's like, okay, it's time to fly, butterfly.
That's right.
Time to fly. Yeah. I love that.
I think it was more so of a children of Israel experience. We don't have to be slaves to anything.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to be slaves to anything. If God is pushing you, whatever God is pushing you to do, if you seek him for divine direction, if you exercise your faith, because they work hand in hand, you have to seek him for direction. Mm-hmm. You can't lean onto your own understanding. And I leaned into my own understanding that day, I would have cussed that guy out.
Mm-hmm.
No, mm-hmm. Probably through text messaging or email, because right. mm-hmm. I couldn't get him on the phone.
Yeah.
But because I did not lean into my own understanding, and because I knew since middle school that I had a vision in journalism, I had no choice but to start my own publication. And so every single day, I'm forever grateful. I'm just thanking God for making Headline News, because it has connected me with so many great people around the country. Not just here in Dallas, not just in Memphis where I'm from, but around the country.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That is awesome. And quickly, I just saw you won some type of award.
I did. That was one of my advertisers in Oklahoma City. I had no idea that I had won this award. The award show took place on July 9th. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that I was up for this business education award. And he reached out to me, say about 3 or 4 days ago, and told me that my name was called for this award. And I highlighted his organization, you know, a few times, but there were people who followed that story, followed his movement, his nonprofit organization, actually named me as a recipient for that award. So I was very, very happy for that. Of course, this is my second award mm-hmm. this year.
Okay.
I had one because I won a Man of Valor Award. Mm-hmm. Out of a credible organization out of Atlanta. So, you know, to me, again, that goes back. That's a testament to my advertisers and followers around the country.
Yes.
You know, this was a collective effort. This was not something that I did on my own. I'm the visionary behind making Headline News. But as far as I'm concerned, this award, everybody wins.
Mm-hmm.
It took everyone. It took you. It took Vanessa Blackwell. It took Dr. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on and on. Most importantly, it took God planning to me this vision, and not only planning to me this vision, but blessing me with the help me who works behind the scenes
mm-hmm.
to make this publication go. So it's not more so of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's people like you, and it's was my wife who really has stepped in and make this engine go. And so for that, I'm so happy for everybody and all my supporters around the country that this has happened. I could not have won this award without them.
That's awesome. That's amazing. I wish I had a sound machine that would clap for you. Thank you so much. That was beautiful. I enjoyed this time that we shared, get a chance to, you know, really see, because you do amazing, ladies and gentlemen, he does amazing work. You need to make sure you check Mr. Andre T. Johnson out. He is the truth. He is the truth.
Please connect with us. And, you know, a lot of times people know me primarily as a sports writer, but I have branched off.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started my own publications. Of course, any media outlet, with the exception of the ones that are geared towards sports like ESPN,
mm-hmm.
most of them report not just news, they report sports. And so, you know, sports journalism is not more so about who won the game, field goal percentages and winning percentages and things like that. We have to report on players' deaths, player contracts. Obviously, look at Deshaun Watson, what he's dealing with off the field, you know, potential criminal issues and things like that. That's news. That has nothing to do with box scores, you know, things like that. So if you got a business, if you got a nonprofit organization, if you're launching a book, if you got a ministry, I see now that most of the CDC regulations are being lifted. Mostly even your churches are starting to open back up and inviting members in. If you want to reintroduce your ministry, this platform, which has thousands of readers reading it daily, reach out to us. Let us help push and promote your brand. This is definitely the right platform to do that. I'm not saying that just because I'm the visionary. The proof is in the pudding. We have all of the reviews to prove that this publication has become a massive game changer for media exposure around the country. So if you got something you're trying to push, especially a book, authors have become our biggest customer. Reach out to us. Let us help you and push your brand at an affordable cost. And right now, we are running a 2-for-1 special. Anybody want to reach out over the next week or so, contact us. We love to produce you with an ad at a low rate. You'll not only have one ad, but you'll have two that you can use the second one anytime you get ready for it. So again, thank you so much for having me, and we look forward to servicing anyone around the country.
That's amazing. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, you can contact Mr. Andre Johnson. You can go to www.makingheadlinenews.com to check us that out, and on Facebook under Andre T. Johnson. Okay, because this is going to be on audio too, so I want to make sure I say it so they can know exactly where to find you. Absolutely. Oh wow! Well, again, I have really enjoyed this time. Thank you so much for coming on Snails with No Shells. We appreciate you, and please make sure you tell your lovely wife again. Thank you, thank her, thank you for allowing you to spend this time with me
on this show. I count it an honor. You know, I'm trying to come up. Snails and shells, I like that. Speaking of shells, I'm trying to come out of my shells of doing more interviews. There have been a lot of interviews I've turned down over the past year or so. And of course, she always tells me, you need to come out of your shell, do more interviews. And I'm trying to open up more. Most print journalists, we love behind the scenes and doing things. We don't like to do a lot of interviews, but you know, in this age now, most print journalists are starting to transition to television. Look at Stephen A. Smith and Michael Wilbon, David Aldridge. These black reporters all started at newspapers. So a lot of them are transitioning. A lot of people didn't know that, but a lot of them, and they covered the NBA like me. But a lot of these print journalists are starting to transition more so to television. And so thank you again. I'm definitely trying to come out of my shell and do more interviews, and you know, whatever we can do to help boost your brand, just know that we are here for you. I count it an honor. I felt so good about coming on this platform. I don't count it lightly at all. So thank you again. I love your platform, and rest assured I'll definitely be following it, and we will do whatever we can to help boost it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to wrap this up. This was an amazing time. Oh, my goodness. I could probably be on here with you for another hour, but you got to go eat. Your wife is cooking some greens and stuff, and I love it. All right, well, thank you.
I do want to apologize to the debris that we see in the background. That was a Dallas Cowboy helmet over my shoulder. So I do want to apologize to your viewers for that.
My wife is
a Cowboy fan.
Yeah, I am too. So that helmet is just fine right where it is.
Thank you.
You said thank you.
From the background, thank you.
He said, thank you. So I do want to apologize to your non-Cowboy fans. We haven't had a tornado in here. But that's her helmet back there. So.
I love it. That is awesome. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to end this show today. We're going to end Snails and No Shells today. At this hour, again, I had an amazing time. I love the energy. And again, congratulations and thank you.
Thank you.
And before we go, I would just like to say, remember, just like the sun, you are necessary. I love y'all.